Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're taking a journey into the world of an artist whose name, well, might not immediately spring to mind like a Van Gogh or a Monet, but his work captivated millions, fetched staggering prices, and definitely sparked intense debate during his lifetime. William Adolphe Bouguereau.
Exactly. And our mission in this deep dive is really to unpack the incredible life and, yeah, often controversial legacy of Bouguereau. He lived from 1825 to 1905.
Right.
We'll trace his artistic evolution, you know, from those really powerful early works to the serene, almost idealized compositions that became his signature.
And what we really want to understand is, why was he so celebrated then?
Yeah.
In his era?
Yeah.
Why was he later largely dismissed by critics, by art history for decades? And maybe most fascinating of all, why is his work now commanding millions again?
It is a striking paradox, isn't it?
It really is. How an artist can be at the absolute pinnacle of success, enormous prices, official recognition, yet be ridiculed by critics as a pompier artist, only to experience this incredible resurgence later on.
Yeah.
What explains that kind of dramatic swing?
Well, it's complex. It's definitely an interplay of factors. To really get it, you need to understand the context of academic art itself.
Okay.
And Bouguereau's, well, commanding place within it. Academic art wasn't just, you know, art taught in a school. It was a rigorous style.
Right.
It prioritized classical ideals, precise drawing, and often these grand historical or mythological subjects. It valued that polished, almost invisible brushwork.
That smooth finish.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And strict adherence to established rules of beauty, composition, the term pompier, which means fireman in French.
Fireman.
Yeah, it was a mocking label for academic painters. Their work was seen as overly grandiose, often depicting these historical themes in that super polished style. It was a bit of a pun on pompous.
Okay.
Reflecting the view that this art was kind of bourgeois, overly theatrical, definitely not cutting edge for the time.
So to understand how Bouguereau reached those heights, we have to start right at the beginning. His early career, his ambition, it was undeniable.
Absolutely. Born in La Rochelle, France, 1825. And from a young age, his determination was clear. You see it in his repeated attempts to win the big one, the Prix de Rome.
That was the prestigious prize, wasn't it?
The most prestigious. And his early work, Dante and Virgil in Hell, painted in 1850 when he was just 25, it really shows that drive. He actually failed twice before to win the Prix de Rome. So he was determined, you know, to make a powerful impression with this one. It depicts a pretty gruesome scene from Dante's Inferno.
Right, the fight between Capocchio and Gianni Schicchi.
Yeah.
Very violent.
Very. And the renowned critic, Théophile Gautier, he definitely noticed. He praised how Bouguereau depicted magnificently through muscles, nerves, tendons, and teeth, the struggle.
Wow.
Gautier even said, there is bitterness and strength in this canvas strength, a rare quality. It really pushed boundaries with exaggerated muscles, dramatic poses, stark contrasts. You can even see influences of, say, William Blake.
Which is so interesting because that intense, almost grotesque direction is such a stark contrast to the idealized serene paintings he became famous for later.
Completely different. And while he didn't win the Prix de Rome with Dante and Virgil, he did win second prize for another work later that same year. Shepherds Find Zenobia, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It proved his versatility even then.
So by 1856, just a few years later, we see him moving decisively towards that signature style with the dance.
Mm-hmm.
This is a large-scale work, and it really shows his growing mastery of allegorical painting.
Right, where ideas are personified.
Oh, exactly, and an evolving neoclassical style. It's got these three ethereal female figures floating among clouds, this incredibly graceful circular movement.
And this period was pivotal. He'd just come back from Italy, right?
Yes.
And the influence of Renaissance masters like Raphael, Titian, it's just so evident. The harmony, the luminous colors. Our historian Fronio Wissmann noted that works like The Dance established Bouguereau as a painter who could create beautifully crafted, large-scale mythological scenes.
Okay.
That appealed to the Second Empire's taste for sensual but dignified classical subjects.
That blend again.
Exactly. And it was also around this time, 1856, that his personal life and art started to intertwine. He began living with his model, Marie Nellie Montchablon.
Ah, the future Mrs. Bouguereau.
Whom he'd later marry, yeah. They had five children together eventually.
So his career really took off during a fascinating period in French history,
the
Second Empire, 1852 to 1870. What was it about that era? Why was it such fertile ground for him?
Well, the Second Empire under Napoleon III, it saw the rise of this wealthy bourgeoisie.
Right.
And they wanted art that reflected traditional values, but often with a more refined yet sensual aesthetic. Bouguereau's mix of classical subjects with that smooth, idealized finish, it just fit perfectly.
Like his Holy Family from 1863?
Perfect example. It illustrates his approach to religious subjects, which were highly valued then. You see, Mary, the Christ child, John the Baptist, serene landscape. He got loads of commissions for religious subjects, church decorations.
And critics liked these.
Some did. Charles Blanc praised them for their purity of line and sentiment. He felt Bouguereau showed sincere devotion and profound respect for sacred subjects. You see that meticulous detail, that characteristic smooth finish.
The licked surface, as they call it.
Yeah, where the brush strokes just disappear, creates this incredibly polished, almost hyper-real, idealized reality.
But while those aimed for purity, he wasn't afraid to explore, well, very different territory.
Not at all. Then in 1864, he paints Bather, one of his most daring early works.
It caused a sensation, I heard.
Oh, yeah. Exhibited in Ghent, bought immediately. Fronia Wissmann described it as shocking in its unabashed sensuality, yet painted with such consummate skill that critics could only marvel.
Wow.
It really shows his technical brilliance, rendering that translucent skin, the play of light, just masterful.
And interestingly, this provocative piece, it was painted shortly after his first wife died in 1863.
That's right. A period of intense personal turmoil for him, even as his career was really taking off. Napoleon III and his court, they were actively promoting a more sensual aesthetic, and Bouguereau's nudes were highly appreciated by wealthy collectors.
So his art really mirrored the tastes of the powerful.
Very closely. Then by 1869, he's showing his mastery of genre painting, you know, scenes of everyday life with the knitting girl.
Ah, yes. The serene rural scene. The young peasant girl knitting.
Reflects an idealized vision of rural life right when France was rapidly industrializing. Charles Blanc praised its perfect execution and sentiment, how Bouguereau elevated these simple subjects with his technique.
And his work was already catching on in America by then.
Big time. The knitting girl was bought by an American banker, Samuel Peck. By 69, Bouguereau had a really substantial American client base. His works were selling for like 30,000 francs.
Which was a huge amount of money back then.
Absolutely. Several years' salary for an average worker. And you can also see influences there. Maybe Vermeer. That quiet dignity, the light.
Okay, moving into the 1870s. Nymphs and Satyr, 1873. That's one of his most famous, isn't it?
Undoubtedly. One of the most celebrated mythological works. It's the scene of playful eroticism for nymphs trying to drag a reluctant satyr into a pool.
And Gautier loved it.
Famously called it the greatest painting of our generation. Praised the technical skill, the classical references.
It perfectly combined that academic precision with the sensual subject matter.
Yeah.
Very appealing to wealthy collectors, I imagine.
Hugely appealing. After its salon success, an American collector, John Wolfe, bought it for 35,000 francs.
Wow.
And it was displayed in the bar, the Hoffman House Hotel in New York City. Became one of the most famous paintings in America.
But hang on, there's a curious twist, right? Didn't it disappear for a while?
Yes, that's right. It vanished in 1901. A buyer, apparently concerned about its offensive content, bought it and basically put it in storage, tried to erase it almost. It stayed hidden until 1942.
No way.
Yeah, when Robert Sterling Clark rediscovered it, acquired it, and thankfully ensured its preservation. It's fascinating how its perceived offensiveness shifted over time, even while its artistic merit was recognized.
Incredible story. So as the Second Empire fades, the Third Republic emerges. His work continues to evolve. His Pietà from 1876, that's a really powerful religious work.
Deeply emotional. It shows Mary cradling Christ, surrounded by mourning angels. Critic Albert Wolff called it a masterpiece of religious sentiment.
And this reflected the mood after the Franco-Prussian War.
Very much so. It tapped into that religious revival, a society looking for spiritual comfort. Bouguereau used this innovative composition, the angels creating a circular movement, drawing you into the central tragedy. You can see influences from Baroque masters like Rubens.
It shows his ability to make traditional themes feel fresh, emotionally resonant.
Exactly.
And speaking of resonance or maybe public fascination, the Nymphaeum from 1878. Another example of his celebrated female nudes.
His reputation in America particularly was really built on these depictions. There was this constant debate among critics. Were they erotic? Were they chaste? Acceptable. Poor taste.
But the patrons loved them.
Clearly. Wealthy patrons absolutely loved them, even if some critics were uncomfortable. I mean, The Bathers, another nude painting, sold for $18,000 to a New York saloon owner.
Wow. Okay. Then 1879, he paints The Birth of Venus. This one's monumental, really ambitious.
Huge. And it drew inspiration from the classics, Raphael's Triumph of Galatea, Botticelli's Birth of Venus, and its acquisition by the French state for the Luxembourg Museum. That was major.
Signified official recognition. Top status.
Absolutely.
It often gets compared to Cabanel's Birth of Venus from 1863, which Napoleon III also bought.
Right.
And it's hard not to think of Emile Zola's incredibly scathing critique of Cabanel's piece.
Oh, yeah.
Calling it a delicious courtesan made of a sort of pink and white marzipan. Zola was really hitting at how mythological themes were maybe just a pretext for these idealized, sensuous nudes. What was his real issue there?
Well, Zola saw it as maybe hypocrisy, or at least a commercial calculation. As a champion of naturalism, he felt these paintings lacked real vitality, connection to real life. They were too perfect, too polished, too sweet.
Right.
Basically using classical themes to sanitize what he saw as titillating imagery for a bourgeois audience without real artistic depth.
Yet Bouguereau's Venus kept drawing huge crowds for decades, right? Even when it was loaned to the Met much later.
Absolutely. Even in 1985. It shows his enduring public appeal, despite changing tastes and Zola's sharp criticism.
So, the 1880s, this marks the absolute peak of his success and influence.
Yeah.
President of the Society of French Artists, huge commercial success, global reach.
Definitely his golden age. His Evening Mood from 1882, for instance. It's an allegorical piece embodying that transition from day to night. Shows his incredible skill with light, especially on skin.
Just masterful.
And this specific piece, it was bought by a wealthy Cuban sugar magnate. So it's one of the few major Bouguereaus in Latin America. It's interesting because even critics like Albert Wolff, who generally slammed academic painting, had to admit.
Admit what?
Well, that even Bouguereau's detractors must admit his technical virtuosity in rendering the effects of light on flesh. His skill was just undeniable, even if you hated the style.
In 1885, he painted The Young Shepherdess. Another idealized vision of rural life, an Italian peasant girl this time.
Right. An art historian, James Harding, called Bouguereau's approach a romanticized view of rural poverty. Very different from someone like Jean-François Millet, who showed the harsher realities.
Right. Millet's work feels much grittier.
Yeah. Bouguereau depicted his peasant girls as, Harding said, poignant rather than threatening, as wistful rather than resentful.
How did he achieve that specific effect? Was it just the subject matter?
Not just that. Technical analysis of this painting shows his meticulous methods. He'd start with detailed charcoal studies for the pose, the composition, then an underpainting in grisaille.
Grisaille.
Yeah, like a monochrome underpainting, often in grays. It helps build up the form and light before you even add color. Then he'd build up countless thin layers of translucent color.
Ah, that creates that luminosity.
Exactly, that luminous depth. And it allowed him to soften contours, contributing to that idealized, gentle look.
That attention to detail clearly paid off. It created a sensation with the return of spring in 1886. Another sensual allegorical work caused a stir at the Paris Salon.
Mm-hmm. Even Zola, while usually dismissive, had to acknowledge Bouguereau's technical mastery, even while questioning its, you know, vitality.
But speaking of sensations, there's a really wild story about this painting from when it was in America, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. This is one of those truly bizarre moments in art history. In 1890, the painting was actually vandalized in Chicago.
But vandalized? How?
By a seminary student. Attacked it with a chair, claimed it was immoral, offended him deeply.
Are you kidding?
Nope. Made headlines all across America. And ironically, despite the damage, it massively increased public interest in Bouguereau's work. So what does an extreme reaction like that tell us about the power of his work, even for those who condemned it? Was it just about perceived immorality or something else?
It suggests his art wasn't just passively admired, you know? It provoked really strong reactions, good and bad. For some, his idealized nudes were about beauty, classical tradition. For others, especially those with stricter morals or part of the new modern art movements, they embodied everything seen as corrupt, superficial, maybe even dangerously seductive about academic art. The vandalism, while extreme, it highlights these intense cultural and moral battles being fought through art back then.
And what happened to the painting?
It was carefully restored, thankfully, and then acquired by a businessman, Francis T.B. Martin.
It's just remarkable that amidst all this public acclaim and controversy, his personal life was marked by such profound tragedy. The First Mourning, painted in 1888. So powerful.
Incredibly powerful. And painted shortly after, he suffered the just crushing loss of his second son.
Oh, terrible.
This monumental biblical scene, Adam and Eve mourning Abel, It conveys this universal emotional impact. Edward Strahan wrote it, quote, shows Bouguereau at his most emotionally powerful.
Right.
And Gautier praised how he captured that first terrible moment when humanity confronted mortality with a dignity that transcends mere illustration. The dramatic sky, the barren landscape, they really enhance that somber mood.
It's hard to imagine the resilience needed to create such, well, beautiful, idealized works amidst such deep personal loss.
Truly astonishing. And despite this grief, his productivity just remained remarkable. In 1889 alone, he created both Whisperings of Love and The Shepherdess.
Two very different paintings in the same year.
Exactly. Whisperings of Love shows his mastery of idealized beauty. Charles Blanc noted how he made ancient allegory speak to modern sensibilities.
And The Shepherdess?
That showcases his dignified portrayals of rural life. Her direct gaze contrasts with the artifice of modern urban life, as critic Albert Wolff put it. He was just so versatile, applying that academic rigor to create both intimate mythological scenes and noble peasant portrayals, shows his broad appeal.
Then in 1890, we have The Bohemian, painting of a young woman with a violin. What's interesting here is that Bouguereau actually changed the background.
Yeah, from a bare stone wall to a view of the Seine, probably at the request of a buyer.
Shows he was responsive to the market, even late in his career.
Definitely. It also had this kind of moral message about the virtue of labor versus the ignominy of poverty. And it later sold for a huge price at auction, over $700,000 in 2004. So enduring value there.
Finally, his Broken Pitcher from 1891. He's 66 by now, but still at the height of his powers.
Absolutely. The Broken Pitcher, it's traditionally seen as a symbol of lost innocence, lost virginity, perhaps. And the young peasant girl's expression, it's this mix of regret, embarrassment, maybe resignation. It really showcases Bouguereau's psychological insight, as James Gurney described it. It exemplifies his later style, combines that academic technique with more naturalistic feeling, more emotional depth.
So we conclude our chronological journey with one of his final masterpieces, Ocean Nymph, completed in 1904. Just a year before he died.
Mm-hmm. Still shows his dedication to classical themes, technical perfection, even as his health was failing.
And yes, we should probably address the question that often comes up with his nudes, were some of his paintings, you know, just an excuse to show naked women.
It's a critical interpretation you hear a lot. And look, his reputation in America was certainly built in large part on his paintings of nudes. That's undeniable. But it's also clear that wealthy patrons and the public eagerly sought them out, often for their perceived beauty, their classical references, perhaps something beyond just simple titillation. It's complex.
And his personal life throughout this incredible career was just marked by these profound tragedies.
It's just devastating. He outlived four of his five children.
Four out of five.
Yeah. In 1877, both his first wife, Marie Nelly, and their infant son died, left him a widower at 52.
Unimaginable.
He later found companionship with a fellow artist, Elizabeth Gardner. He married her in 1896, but only after his mother, who had objected, passed away.
Wow. It's almost unthinkable the resilience required to keep producing such beauty amid such profound repeated loss.
It truly is. Bouguereau died in 1905, age 79, back in his hometown of La Rochelle. And despite the fact that the modernist revolution was already kind of eclipsing his reputation,
right,
he was honored with grand funeral processions, memorials in both Paris and La Rochelle. He left behind this huge legacy, over 800 finished paintings.
And his legacy today remains incredibly complex, contested. During his lifetime, he was among the most celebrated artists in the Western world. Huge influence on American art collecting during the Gilded Age.
Absolutely top tier.
Yet for decades, modernist critics just dismissed him. Overly sentimental, technically rigid. Why was he so thoroughly dismissed for so long, even while some contemporaries were being rediscovered?
It was largely a reaction against everything academic art stood for, really. Modernists, they prioritized visible brushwork, raw emotional expression, a break from traditional subjects, traditional beauty ideals.
And Bouguereau represented the opposite.
Exactly. With his flawless technique, his idealized figures, he became the symbol of everything they were rebelling against. He was the establishment they wanted to tear down.
But now
there's this significant contemporary reassessment happening. It recognizes his frankly extraordinary craftsmanship, his enduring influence on figurative art, and while his paintings now command millions at auction,
right,
which solidifies his complex, continually evolving legacy, it just keeps shifting, keeps being reevaluated.
So what does this all mean for you listening? Bouguereau's journey, celebrated master, then forgotten academic, And now back to this admired figure in the art market. It tells us so much
mm-hmm.
about artistic taste, how cyclical art appreciation can be,
mm-hmm.
and that tension between public appeal and critical acclaim.
Which raises a really important question, I think. If an artist's reputation can swing so dramatically peak popularity, then critical dismissal, then back to immense market value, what does that suggest about the true measure of greatness in art?
Yeah.
And who truly gets to decide what stands the test of time?
We invite you to explore more of his 800 finished paintings and, well, decide for yourself.